Today on Family Talk.
On the 15th of April, 1912, the RMS Titanic, a British passenger ship sailing from Southampton to New York City, collided with an iceberg and subsequently sank. You know the story. More than 1,500 people lost their lives on that fateful morning, and the story was made even more remarkable by boasts from the builders that the Titanic was so well built that, quote, it was deemed unsinkable. This nautical disaster serves as a powerful and poignant reminder for married couples. More often than not, the biggest dangers to a marriage are not the obvious, but what lies beneath the surface in your relationship. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and during the next half hour, we're going to hear the second half of a two-part conversation on the topic of avoiding infidelity. Dr. Dobson's guests for this discussion are Bob and Cheryl Record. The Records are the founders of Total Life Impact, which is an organization that challenges people to live a life that matters. They've been married for over 40 years and have three grown children. They are also survivors of an attack to their union precipitated by unwanted advances from an outsider, a story that is told in their book, Beneath the Surface. Here now is Dr. James Dobson to reintroduce today's guests here on Family Talk.
Cheryl, I want to start with you today. We were talking last time about the need for men especially to be held accountable, having someone that knows him intimately enough to say, are you doing what's right?
Right.
Especially for a man on the road. I think that is just essential, don't you?
Absolutely. Now, Bob has got men in his life, and he can share that with you, but who ask him the tough questions along the way. In fact, just a few weeks ago, he was traveling, and one of them called them and said, can I take a minute? Can I ask you some questions? And asked him those questions.
Yeah. Yeah, he asked me, have you seen anything on the internet that you would be ashamed of if Jesus walked in the room? He said, have you had any temptation to have flirtation with another woman other than Cheryl in the last week? And it's those kinds of questions. And then I learned one from Chuck Swindoll a number of years ago. After whatever question somebody else asks you, they need to ask you, have you lied to me about the answers of any one of the previous ones? That's a powerful one. So I think the accountability, Jim, is key. But I would say in accountability, we talk a lot about that in Christian circles, but I've learned something. On accountability, people don't just come up and take accountability on your behalf.
Yeah.
You have to grant it.
Yes, you do.
You have to say, I need you to help me be accountable. Hmm.
What kind of reaction have you had to this book?
It's been amazing to me the number of people who have gotten this for their whole church staff or their whole deacon body, pastors who are buying it for their entire lay leadership. I've been stunned. That's the only way I can say it. I've been stunned.
I'm stunned by the fact that there is this kind of problem in the clergy, but there is.
Yes, there is.
One of the issues, too, that came up several years ago that I would never have considered. When Bob was with that same ministry in which I approached him about his being gone so much, he had a secretary. And she said to me that day, and I'll never forget it, you need to understand, Cheryl, that there are women who will target your husband because he is in ministry. Because in their insecurity, they think if they can make a minister fall, that somehow they must be very special. And that's an issue I think we haven't addressed well. But within our churches and within our organizations, there are women who want to see a man fall.
We have recorded a kind of a little vignette that comes from this book. So this is scripted. This is not somebody who called. And let's hear that now, and I would like you to comment on it.
I still can't believe it happened. You know, I had a good marriage, two great kids. My youngest had just graduated. My husband Jason was doing great at work, and I was proud of him for that. But sometimes it seemed like the job was more important than I was. And with the kids gone, I wasn't sure what to do with myself. I don't know when Darren came into the picture, but suddenly there he was. I mean, he was interested in every detail about me, and when I entered the room, his face lit up. It was exhilarating. Jason hadn't responded to me like that in years. I know adultery is wrong, but I rationalized it. I would say, you know, Doesn't God want me to be happy? Doesn't He want my emotional needs met? Maybe He's even providing someone to fill the void.
Well, there it is again. It's what we were talking about last time. That's the classic scenario. What did you say about it in the book?
Well, it's a composite of a number of people who I have dealt with who have gone through the tough time of moral failure, a number of women. And I think that basically the issue is that husbands and wives have got to be aware that it can happen to each of them and that you have to be ready to be hit from the blind side. And that leads into a lot of the things that we've discussed, like your busyness, your giftedness, feeling that you can abuse the authority that you have in leadership at any level, be it as a husband, a wife, a Sunday school teacher, a PTA member, or a church Christian leader.
What do they say to you? When you sit down and confront them, the facts now are irrefutable that you have done this. Mm-hmm. What is their excuse? What do they say?
I'll never forget one that just rings in my mind, Jim. It was one of the good friends of my life, and I had traveled with him, spoken with him on programs, prayed with him, laughed with him, eaten with him, and it came to the surface that he had had an affair, and I called him on the phone just as soon as I got the word. His wife had already left him, I had been told, and I heard him answer the phone, and I hated what was going to come, and I called his name and said, "Didn't you know? And didn't you hear the alarm bells ringing inside of you?" And I'll never forget his answer. There was a long, quiet pause, and he said, "Sure, Bob, I heard the alarm bells, but I decided to disconnect the wires."
Huh. And so, quit listening.
Yeah, exactly. What I have found inevitably is a disconnection of the wires. It comes by many rationalizations. You covered several of them in Tough Love, a great book that you did. Along with those, I hear, "But I can handle it," especially if toying with pornography. Boy, I hear that one a lot. Or, "But God wants me happy." That's another biggie. And then I also hear, "But I don't mean anybody to get hurt." Those rationalizations happen over and over and over again. And I think that basically you do what David did. You immediately run to ways to cover what it is.
And get in deeper and deeper,
that's right.
Don't you?
And
led
exactly right.
To murder in his case. You have given two examples from Scripture. The one is David and Bathsheba, and David did it all wrong. Mm-hmm. But then you also talk about Joseph and Potiphar's wife.
Right.
And what a contrast that was.
It sure was, because here's a young man, it says in Genesis 39, and Joseph was handsome and very well built. And the thing that I appreciate so much, Jim, about Scripture is it doesn't cut around edges. It doesn't tiptoe through the tulips. It says, here's life.
For it.
Yeah. And suddenly the boss's wife is saying, "I want you to go to bed with me." And he could have rationalized any number of ways. Sure, quick fire way to the top. I should be getting more than I'm getting anyway, so after all, I deserve this. It could have been any number of things, but instead he said, "My master has withheld nothing from me in his household. He has entrusted everything to me, and no one is more important in his house than I. When he entrusts me with all that he has, he worries about nothing. Again, he has kept nothing from me except you, his wife." And then he says, "How can I commit such great a sin against my God?" He understood he was accountable not only to God, but to his own master, Potiphar, and he couldn't do it, and he ran.
What an incredible story that is. You know, the books that were written 100 years ago are out of date totally today. Here is something that was written in the book of Genesis.
That's right.
What was that, 4,000 years ago? And it is right now. It is today. And this young man is faced with an offer and probably had normal desires. He was not married. And he could easily have fallen at that point. Satan threw the worst he had at him. And furthermore, you know, there's the matter of rejecting the king's wife. You don't know for sure how she's going to use her power.
Right.
Man, that young man had the courage to flee.
And you said a great statement. He didn't know how she would use her power, and she did. Yeah. She falsely accused him of rape that led to his incarceration. But he didn't compromise on what he knew was right.
Hmm. Cheryl, are you aware? I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you aware that men and women tend to lust in different ways? Mm-hmm. Women tend to lust after a romantic relationship mm-hmm. with a man, mm-hmm. one who can meet her needs, one who can laugh with her and talk right. with her. She may have no, strong desire for sex in the beginning at all. That may not be even on the radar screen for her. Mm-hmm. She wants somebody that will love her.
Yes.
A man is much more likely, although he's drawn to that same thing, a man is much more likely to lust after mm-hmm. this other woman physically. But it's lust in both cases.
Right.
And I find that some women don't realize, as Christian women, mm-hmm. that fantasizing about a man that can come into her life, mm-hmm. especially if it's a particular man, somebody that's in her life, is a form of lust and a very dangerous form, because then all you need is the opportunity.
For me personally, when I was walking through that time where this fellow was paying that attention to me, I realized fairly early on, it dawned on me one day, this is a temptation. And Bob is gone. And I had some choices to make. The first one was to put light on it. And that was to go to him and say what I was saying. But even before I had done that, I think I mentally began to run through, all right, he's paying attention to me. If I respond, what's going to happen? Well, it would lead to this next step that maybe, yes, he might come over or he might do something. But I allowed myself to mentally picture the step-by-step progression that could possibly take place until I got to where I realized, no, that's not what I want. I did not want to jeopardize my marriage. I'd look at my 2-year-old at that point and say, what would life be like? And I remember the day, and again, I want to make real clear that this was strictly a temptation phase. There's nothing that had been said between us. I had not given this man any indication of interest. Nothing untoward had happened. But I remember mentally, as I walked through those steps, picturing what it would be like to have to look Bob in the face and say, here's where I am. And that's why I chose to quickly go to him and say, I don't like what I'm feeling here. Help me with this. Our marriage is too important, and you're the one that I want to have these things.
I admire you for that, Cheryl. That was hard to do, wasn't
mm-hmm. yes, it?
Is that what you recommend to others, if there are women out there who are drifting?
I think a lot of women keep these things bottled up inside. Maybe they think their husband's supposed to read their mind, or maybe they've even tried to talk to their husband, but in his busyness, he's not hearing what she's really saying. And so he interprets her words as nagging. You're too busy. You're gone too much. Your job is too important. Taking the time to maybe get him away alone, away from the busyness of the things, away from the kids, not reacting, but really sharing her heart and saying, I love you. I want mm-hmm. this from you, and I'm afraid for us.
Bob, let me ask you a related question. In your counseling, especially with pastors, but with others, what do you recommend where an affair has occurred and it has not come to light, and it is very carefully hidden and covered up, or at least so the individual thinks, as David did with Bathsheba? And in his case, Nathan the prophet comes and says, thou art the man. But sometimes Nathan the prophet doesn't show up, and it is kept below the surface, which is actually beneath the surface, right, as you call it in your book. Do you recommend that disclosure occur between a husband and wife?
Yeah, most always, because of the cleaning of the wounds that have to happen.
Yeah.
I think if it stays down below the surface, subterfuge continues. And really, there's a double life and a compromise that gets built into the relationship.
There's always this hidden barrier between them that they can both feel and only one
That's right.
understands. But the other one is, you never, ever know when that's going to break into the light. You know, out there with that woman you've had the affair with is a husband and
right.
children and secretaries and neighbors and people that, find out
yep.
about it. Beware those sins that you think you do in secret,
yeah.
Because they will be broadcast. And
right.
And so it's a lot more damaging to stumble over something like that than it is to disclose it,
right.
Repent of it, and get beyond it and get forgiveness for it.
That's right. And it's like the yarn of a sweater. Once it starts pulling out a little bit and somebody takes it and pulls it more, pretty soon the whole sweater's unraveled. That's what happens when the sin starts finding you out. And if you just are man or woman enough to step up to responsibility, and I think there's the key.
Yeah.
You got to take responsibility for where you've been. And you've got to get past where our society is, and that's the victim stage. It's always somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it's nobody's fault but our own.
And if you do it and get away with it, there's always the possibility of it happening again.
Yeah. Right. And I think you've got, secondly, we've got to guard our heart, Jim, because Proverbs 4:23 says, guard your heart because out of it will come the issues of your life. Guards don't just happen, they're posted. And once guards are posted, they've got to keep vigilant. So even if you come and you admit it and you get help and you get counseling, your marriage is put back together, it is an eternal vigilance that's got to occur. And it comes from all kinds of different directions on a continued basis.
What are those guards? Who's posted in your life?
I think every person has to post their guards. One of them is the accountability issues we talked about of who's asking you the hard questions, whether you're a man or a woman. Who's asking you the hard questions about what you could be toying with? Because as Cheryl so well said, that's the willingness to shine light on the dark recesses of your life. I think a guard with your eyes. What are you looking at? I would say to every man listener, if your wife by chance gets a Victoria's Secret catalog, have her ditch it in the trash before you come home. Because the reality is, if you go back to Playboy a number of years ago in the 60s, you've basically got the equivalent of what Victoria's Secret is today. It's soft porn. And a man does not need that. And wives need to love their husbands enough to throw that stuff away. If you're in ministry, make sure that any door that you have in your office area has glass in it. And if you can't get glass in it, make sure you don't have a door closed anytime you've got a member of the opposite sex.
And here's one I've never said before, but I'll say it now. If you're a minister and you're about to prepare for a sermon and you're on the internet, you keep that door open so people can hear what's going on there.
Absolutely.
I believe many ministers are being damned right at that point by what they see behind a closed door.
I agree.
And they get hooked on it, and man, they are hooked.
They are that. And accountability is not just holding someone to a tight line. Accountability is, I want the very best in your life. I want you to succeed. Therefore, I'm willing to do whatever it takes for you to succeed in your walk. If that's my view of you, then out of love, I have no choice but to go to you. And after a lot of prayer, to say, this is hard for me, and I need you to know it's hard for me, but I want you to know I'm coming to you because I love you more than you could ever understand. And out of our friendship, I need to ask you a tough question. I need to say that I've found myself in that position many times, but I've had so many come back and say, thanks for having the guts, because I was so close to going over the edge.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, in the closing moments here, talk to the woman out there. Kind of role play with her a little bit. Who is lonely and who has this ache inside? She's been reaching for her husband, and he's either gone or he just doesn't know that she is even there. What do you say to her?
Well, first of all, I probably would say, what are you reading? What are you watching? I think for women, you talk about men, pornography on the internet. I know that's becoming more of a problem for women. I would still guess that the first entree point to a woman is romance novels.
Yeah.
It's movies. It may even be still soap operas, things like that, that portray that idea of that constant romance that's going to be out there, that man that will somehow just inevitably know every need that they have. I'd say to a lady, first of all, why don't you picture talking to your husband? Imagine yourself having to talk to your children and explain to them why mommy and daddy aren't together anymore. And ask yourself, is it really going to be worth that price? Start to begin to really guard your heart in certain ways. Don't have people into your home. Don't ask a man to come in if your husband is not there. I think you have to watch what you're listening to. And I found in my own life, for example, I had a friend one time who was going through a very difficult divorce. Her husband had been abusive, and I was her best friend at that point. But I found that she became so negative about marriage and about men that she began to have an effect on me. And I found myself becoming highly critical of Bob, not because of anything he was doing, but because of what her husband had done. I found that for me, I had to back off that relationship just a bit to get the kind of perspective to make sure that our marriage was guarded and our family was guarded.
I have shared this illustration before, but I think it's appropriate again. Shirley and I had been married about 4 or 5 years. We had a fuss. It was something stupid. I don't even remember what it was. I was pretty agitated at the time, and I knew that I needed some space. So I went out and got in the car, and I drove to get some fast food or something. It wasn't a long trip. And coming home, a very attractive girl pulled up beside me in a car and looked over at me and smiled. And she was flirting with me. And I kind of dropped back a little bit. And she was obviously aware that I was still there. And then she slowed down real slow and slowly turned right. She was asking me to follow her. Now, I didn't do it, and I didn't even almost do it. But I saw Satan laid a trap for me, and it scared me, and I went home and made up with Shirley. But, you know, those things come when you're not expecting them.
That's right.
And that's what makes this book so important, Beneath the Surface. And I hope that what we've had to say on these 2 days will be useful to people. I believe it will, and I believe the book will. Dr. Bob and Cheryl Record, thank you for sharing this, for being so open in this book, and appreciate you all being our friends, what you stand for, and you got a big job to do, and our prayers go with you.
It's an honor to be standing side by side with you in so many issues, and I would just like to say in closing, if there is somebody out there who's fallen, it's not hopeless. You can be put back together, but you've got to want to be, and you've got to say, I was wrong. And then you've got to say, I need help, and I want to be cleaned from the inside out. And then I'm willing to turn 180 degrees and walk God's way, not mine. Yeah. Those have got to happen. But if they happen, with time, with a lot of love, with a lot of care, and with biblical guidance, you can put life back together.
Well, wonderful words of advice from the author of Beneath the Surface. Bob and Cheryl, thanks for being our guests.
God bless you all.
And that brings to a close our two-part conversation on the topic of avoiding infidelity on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Our thanks once again to Dr. Bob Record and his wife Cheryl for joining us in studio for this important discussion and for being so transparent in opening up about how the threat of infidelity almost derailed their own marriage. The Records write about this challenge, and they also present what God showed them about resisting temptation and maintaining a healthy marriage in spite of the risk of infidelity in our culture today. And they do so in a book called Beneath the Surface. We have a link for that resource on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Be sure you also check out Dr. Dobson's book, Love Must Be Tough, when you're visiting there as well. One of the best ways to avoid temptation in marriage is to find a marriage mentor who can help you push back against the culture of infidelity that has become so common today. Visit our Facebook page and meet up with thousands of other Family Talk listeners who are discussing this issue right now online. Go to facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson. Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk is committed to equipping families to stand for righteousness in today's culture by modeling healthy marriages and healthy parent-child relationships. This broadcast is completely listener-supported. Your tax-deductible donation today can help make a brighter tomorrow for a marriage in crisis right now. Call toll-free 877-732-6825 with your most generous donation. Again, the toll-free number to call is 877-732-6825. You can also give a gift online when you go to drjamesdobson.org. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to join us again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton. Thanks for listening to Family Talk. You going through a tough time right now? Deep waters, financial trouble, relationship issues, and more? We're here to help you. We'd love to talk with you. You can call us right now toll-free, 877-732-6825. Again, you can call us right now toll-free, 877-732-6825, or you can connect with us on our website at drjamesdobson.org. There's always hope, and we're here for you. Call us right now, 877-732-6825.